Afternoon, members, guests. If you'll please take your seat, members, we will begin the meeting. All right, the meeting is now called to order. John, will you please call the roll?
Chair Boyd.
Here.
Vice Chair Grant.
Here.
Ranking Member Waldman.
Here.
Representative Albrin.
Here.
Attellis.
Here.
Broda. Caldwell.
Here.
Cumby.
Here.
Eagle.
Here.
DeRosa.
Here.
Rayburn.
Here.
Rangel.
Here.
Stewart.
Taylor.
Here. Watson.
Here.
Workman.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you, John. And as always, if anyone in the audience wishes to address the committee, please fill out an appearance form and bring it up now for our staff so we can call you at the appropriate time for the bill that you'd like to speak to. And also, if you would please turn off your electronic devices or turn them to silent during this meeting, we would appreciate that. Members, today, as you know, we have three bills to consider. And the first one that we'll hear today by Representative Broxson, 215, regarding federal write-in absentee ballots. Representative Broxson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I wanted you to know beforehand that I know many of your members here today and actually like a few of them. So good to be here.
I might have said that after the vote, Representative Broxson, but well, your call, sir.
House Bill 215 lines up with the Florida GI Bill that we're going to pass in the upcoming session. This is a phenomenal statement from our legislative body that we are going to line Florida up with the highest standard of protecting the voting rights of our military people serving overseas. This bill perfects an imperfection that's currently in Florida law. Currently, if a member of a military service or his family requests an absentee ballot and they do not receive it in time to vote, they can, in fact, request an emergency federal absentee ballot. Under current Florida law, they can only vote for a candidate where there's two members running. This bill would allow them to vote in every initiative, whether it's a election, a judicial race, or a ballot initiative. And that, Mr. Chairman, and all of my good friends of this committee, is the bill.
Thank you, Representative Broxson. And I don't believe there are any amendments on the bill. No, seeing none. Are there questions of Representative Broxson on the bill? Any questions? All right, seeing none. Is there public testimony? We do have one on record, Paul Lux, Supervisor of Elections from Crestview. Mr. Lux, would you like to speak to the group? You're recognized, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to point out that, as Representative Broxson said, I'm the Supervisor of Elections from Okaloosa County, and I went to Representative Broxson to explain to him how this hole got in the law and why we need to amend things to fix it. Long story short, we amended our law in 2010 to allow that federal write-in absentee ballot to be used for candidate races only where there were two or more candidates, not the wide open. I had hoped that they would fix it so that it could be so that a voter could use it to vote for any race in which they were eligible. But at the time, the federal form did not specify that it could be used to vote for ballot initiatives as well as candidate races. And that is part of the reason why when they changed the law in Florida back in 2010, they did not include ballot initiatives. I went to the Federal Voting Assistance Program, told them that our problem here in Florida was that their federal form needed to be updated. In 2011, they went out of their way to amend that form to make it clear that it can also now be used to vote for ballot initiatives, and this bill just seeks to align Florida's law with the change to the federal form so that Florida will be added to the majority of the states of our union that allow voters to use this federal write-in absentee ballot to vote for every race in which they're eligible to vote in case they don't get their regular ballot. And I'll take any questions from any members of the committee if you have any.
Thank you, Mr. Lux. Any members, any questions? All right.
Thank
appreciate
you,
your testimony, sir. Anyone else? We didn't have any other cards. All right. Seeing none, Representative Broxson, you recognize the close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like
I'm sorry. Got a little bit ahead of myself. Debate, members.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're recognizing me? Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Broxson, I just, in debate, would just ask that you answer this question. I know it's effective date on the July 1st, 2014. But I do support the bill. I'd just like for you in your closing remarks to kind of touch on if this is going to be, will they be eligible for this voting period coming up in November?
Okay, that would have been a question, but if you want to do that
I'm saying in debate.
I know, in your close, if you want to address that, sir, that would be fine. Any other debate on the bill? Seeing none. Representative Broxson, you recognize the close.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And if it doesn't, we will address that and make sure it does. I want you to visualize a person in Afghanistan that's under fire, that in his off time takes the time to vote. What an incredible statement. And not only will he vote, he will go through a measure that would be almost impossible for any of us to do. Request a blank piece of paper and have all the information on that candidate or that race to vote. We had hundreds and thousands in Florida that did that the last cycle. It's a great statement of not only of these folks fighting for our right to vote, but voting themselves. And it really, in some ways, puts many of us to shame that we cannot go 2 or 3 miles to vote when they are voting with their life on the line. That, Mr. Chairman, is the end of my presentation.
Very nice close, Representative Broxson. John, will you please call the roll?
Representative Albritton? Yes. Attilis? Broda?
Yes.
Caldwell?
Yes.
Cumbie?
Yes.
Eagle?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
La Rosa?
Yes.
Rayburn?
Yes.
Rangel?
Yes.
Stewart?
Yes.
Taylor?
Yes.
Wallman?
Yes.
Watson?
Yes.
Workman?
Yes.
Chavoy?
Yes.
All right, members, by your vote, CS for HB 215 is reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative Broxson. Next, we will consider House Bill 9 by Representative Nunez regarding legislative session dates. Representative Nunez, you are recognized.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, House Bill 9 simply changes the start date of the legislative session to the first Tuesday after the second Monday in January of each even-numbered year only, beginning in 2016. That is the bill, Mr. Chairman. I do believe there's an amendment.
Thank you, Representative Nunez. Yes, we do have an amendment with barcode 647503, and you are recognized to explain your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a technical amendment.
Thank you, Representative Nunez. Are there questions? Is there public testimony on the amendment? Okay, seeing none. Is there debate on the amendment? Representative, you're recognized to close on your waving close. All in favor of the amendment, say yay.
Yay.
Any opposed? Great. Amendment is adopted. Any other amendments?
No, sir.
All righty. Now we're on the bill as amended. Are there questions on the bill as amended? Members, questions on the bill as amended? Is there public testimony on the bill? We do have one. Mr. Brian Pitts, you are recognized, sir.
Thank you. well, why are you changing the dates? Is there like a reason? Because now for years it's been, you know, March, always. So how does this, to put it actually quite plainly, improve the efficiency of state affairs? Literally, that's not a pun either. Okay, well, here's the problem we got. It's not necessary nor practical. It doesn't improve efficiency of the legislature as the regular sessions, implicates needless earlier committee weeks, not beneficial for Floridians at all as the regular session date starts, causing confusion. Citizens have a problem enough trying to figure out what the legislature is doing. But to have this yo-yo effect, odd, even, January, March, January, it's not beneficial for the citizens. Causes more efficiencies to executive agencies as to setting the required public meetings as to their annual budgets. Remember in statute, before they come to you, they have to have every executive agency has to have a public meeting for the annual budget. Well, they got to move that up. You don't think, remember how many agencies you got now? And they got to remember each odd and even year to pinpoint this, they got to, you know, put on a chalkboard versus right now it's fine. It's very efficient. We know it's always going to be around, you know, November or September sometimes, you know, depending on when they do it. But now you got them in mid-year doing public meetings for annual budgets. Again, what's the need? Okay, nevertheless, as I was saying, the public meetings
require public meetings as to the annual budgets, then presenting to the legislature the budget requests and exercises. Remember, y'all do exercises with them. But now it's going to have to be done 2 to 4 months earlier than usual because it's not March. Then, of course, the staff analysis brings it up on page, what I think it is, 5. The problem with the governor's recommended budget, which he usually he does in February. Now he will have to do in December or November on even numbered years. In other words, what's the point of going, the yo-yo effect? What is the need? In other words, when you're going to make change something like this, yes, we know you can do it in the Constitution, but you just don't do it just to do it. What is the need to have everybody start jumping through these hoops even an odd number of years? Yes, it is an issue because it's not efficient. It's not efficient. Now, I understand why. Because for election campaign years, obviously. But you're not here for your convenience or ease. Yes, running a campaign can be difficult, very stressful, very timely, especially when you're in the session in May and it's an election year. But that's your decision to run for the office. You don't pick up a convenience tool, which this would be, and I don't think either is the intent of the Constitution giving you the authority to change the even number of years. That's the next issue. Ask yourself this question. What was the reason that was actually drafted by the Constitution Revision Commission at that time? That has not even brought up. One thing for sure, I assure you it wasn't based on, well, so it can be convenient for House members and Senate members on even number of years to run for their particular offices. And that's the only reason. Now, so it's not needed, it's not efficient, and I don't understand what you're doing here, but okay.
Thank you, Mr. Pitts. Any other members of the audience wish to provide public testimony? All right, seeing none, is there a debate on the bill as amended? Any debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Nunez, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I will be brief, but certainly I understand some of the concerns that Mr. Pitts raised, but if you all would look back in time, you would see that we have changed the start date of session throughout the years, not just as specific to redistricting, but as recent as 1994. We met in February instead of March. Additionally, the efficiency will be improved in allowing state agencies, entities, institutions to absorb any budgetary impacts and give them time to properly react to what we do up here in the legislative process. And we are able to do this. Some of you sat through the redistricting process. The sun continued to rise in the east and set in the west, and no major catastrophic events happened with us starting in January. So with that, I ask for your favorable support, and I close on the bill.
Thank you, Representative Nunez. John, would you please call the roll?
Representatives Albrin?
Yes.
Artelis?
Yes.
Broda?
Yes.
Caldwell? Cumbie?
Yes.
Eagle? Grant? LaRosa?
Yes.
Rayburn?
Yes.
Rangel?
Yes.
Stewart?
Yes.
Taylor?
Yes.
Waldman?
Yes.
Watson?
Yes.
Workman?
Yes.
Chaboy?
Yes.
If you pass.
I get it. Okay, thank you. Good afternoon. And I do like everyone on this committee. So. Right. So basically, I'll give you a little bit of a brief history because you need sort of a need to understand. Florida, the U.S. government passed a Civil Rights Act. Florida passed a Civil Rights Act. The U.S. and in that act were all sorts of protected classes that you can't discriminate against. The federal government passed an act for pregnancy discrimination. Florida never specifically changed its statutes, but the Florida statute included the term sex. So when the Florida courts were looking at whether there was a you could discriminate against a pregnant woman, some of the courts said because of using the word sex as a protected class, that included pregnancy, and therefore some of the courts allowed suits to proceed in state courts. You could always proceed in federal court because you always had the federal statute. So what happened was you always had the dual statute, the federal and the state, but at some point some of the state courts would look at the issue and say, well, I'm not so sure if Florida meant to include pregnant women because it didn't specifically say pregnancy, it just said sex. And as a result of that, one of the courts specifically said, no, if you're not going to enumerate the term pregnancy, we're not going to allow your case to proceed in state court. So there is a conflict right now in our state courts. It is actually in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. I mean, not the U.S. Supreme Court, the Florida Supreme Court right now. And we would like to resolve this issue here in the legislature and say to them definitively, yes, we want pregnant women to be protected under our laws from any claims of discrimination, of employment, and also in lodging and housing. So that's basically, in a nutshell, what the bill does.
Thank you, Representative Berman. Are there any amendments on the bill? Seeing none. Questions on the bill? Members, are there questions on the bill? Yes, Representative Workman.
Thank you. Just a quick question. You just sparked something. If it includes housing, if you have a female wishing to rent an apartment in a no kids apartment, if maybe it's a adult only facility, how does this affect that?
It's public lodging. I don't think it's housing. I think it's like if you. So say repeat the question again. I'm sorry.
You said she can't be discriminated against in all matters, including lodging. My question is, will this affect somebody trying to rent who is currently pregnant into a facility that does not allow children? If she is denied rental access, can she sue on basis of this bill?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have the exact answer. There's people here from the Florida Human Rights Commission, and maybe we can flesh that out with the Human Rights Commission.
Okay. All right. Would you like to respond to that now? And did you fill out an appearance card? If you would, just bring it up after. Thank you very much. And just tell us who you are. And
I'm Cheyenne Castillo. I'm the general counsel with the Florida Commission on Human Relations. If I can address the question, actually this bill does not go toward housing. It would just be public accommodations and employment matters. There currently is already in place that someone is protected under the familial status in housing, which includes pregnancy, but that does not apply to housing for older persons. There's an exemption there for those specific kinds of housing.
Okay. Vice Chair Grant, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. While you're there, there's been a lot of conflicting information about the effect of this bill. Are we creating a new protected class in Florida? Or are we aligning the provisions between federal and state statute for an already existing class?
You're recognized.
I would say that we are aligning the Florida law with the federal law. The federal law sets out the Pregnancy Discrimination Act, and so that is already covered. Sex is also covered in federal law, so we're trying to align ourselves with what is already law under the federal statute.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my understanding is that the language included currently, or the statute currently in Florida, and the penalties, timelines, all of these sorts of things, caps on damages, are different between the state and federal law, even if this bill passes. Am I understanding that correctly?
You recognize?
That is correct.
Okay. And I don't want to bombard you. I just heard your title, and so there was a couple of, I think, clarifications. So thank you.
Thank you. Members, other questions? All right, seeing none, we'll move to public testimony. Thank you. First, we have Stephanie Kunkel with Business and Professional Women of Florida. Thank you, Ms. Kunkel. Next, we have Tim Nungesser with NFIB, which I think is National Federation of Independent Businesses. Is that right? You're welcome, Mr. Nungesser.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon. My name is Tim Nungesser. I'm the legislative director for the National Federation of Independent Business here in Florida. We represent about 10,200 businesses in the state here, about 355,000 nationwide. I just want to start off by saying no one wants to allow pregnancy discrimination in the workplace. It's already protected under federal law. I do have the uncomfortable task of coming up and posing some real inequities that are caused within the bill. It is a fact that the bill increases liability exposure on small businesses between 15 and 100 employees from $50,000 to $100,000. That is a fact within the bill. The bill also cuts liability exposure on large corporations with more than 500 employees from $300,000 to $100,000. It quadruples the amount of time a plaintiff has to sue from 90 days to a full year. It also adds another venue for the plaintiff to file suit. The bill would allow for the plaintiff to venue shop for a more plaintiff-friendly court. Now, we have met with the Florida Commission on Human Relations on this. We have not come to a resolution in terms of addressing some of these concerns within the bill. So I just urge the committee to take a look at some of these effects, these very real effects on small business, before passing it out of this committee. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Nungesser. Representative Walden, you had a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. While you were speaking, I reread the bill again because I didn't see any of that in what you were saying. All this does is add pregnancy to what are already protected. So where did you come out with all those numbers about increasing the exposure to the businesses?
Mr. Nungesser, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, it's actually handled in a cross-reference. In the state of Florida, all of the protected classes are capped at $100,000, regardless of the size of the employer.
Follow-up?
Yes, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But I'm just looking at the bill, and I understand all that's referenced in here, and I look through it, the words pregnancy is underlined. It's defined pregnancy. It says the cross out of as defined in this chapter. Pregnancy is underlined. Pregnancy is underlined. Condition of pregnancy is underlined. Pregnancy is underlined. There's nothing else that says anything that's changed anything in the current statute. So are you just complaining about the current statute and the rights that are provided to all of those other protected classes also?
Mr. Recognize. Well, again, going back to the statutory construction, it is a cross-reference, so this will be effectively adding in a new cause of action for pregnancy discrimination under state law. Under federal law, it's already protected, and we want to make sure that it's still protected under federal law. That's not the issue. The other issue you'd run into is if you look at federal law, for corporations with 500 or more employees, they have $300,000 worth of protection under federal law. That's not in the state statute. And so that's, you know, they have all businesses are capped at $100,000 in the state of Florida.
Okay, and then Representative Watson next. Vice Chair, all right. Representative Watson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like for you to explain to me how it increases the liability. I'm not getting that from you.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under current law for businesses between 15 and 100 employees, there's essentially a tiered system at the federal level. 15 to 100 employees have $50,000 in liability exposure. For businesses with 100 to 200, it's $100,000 in liability. For businesses above 500, it's $300,000 in liability. So what you're essentially doing is by making this a state protected class, the state of Florida has them capped at $100,000 regardless of the business size. So you're going for that class for 15 to 100 employees, it's actually going from $50,000 under the federal protections to $100,000 at the state protections.
Follow up, President Watson.
And looks like to me if they followed this bill and didn't discriminate, they'd be pretty safe. But thank you. That's all, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I don't think that was a question. But all right. And then Vice Chair Grant, did you have a question, Mr. Nungesser? Okay. Please.
Thank you for your testimony. Can you clarify, because I just asked a question a moment ago, is it your understanding that this bill would create a new protected class in the state statute?
Yes. Roughly, and the Florida Commission on Human Relations will get you the numbers, but not all courts are seeing this as a protected class currently. So for some of the courts in some of the jurisdictions within the state of Florida, it will create a new protected class. Now they are still protected at the federal level.
Follow up.
So just to kind of take a hypothetical scenario, if I'm a pregnant woman who's discriminated against and I want to file a suit in the state of Florida today, I can file under the EEOC in the constitution or the statutory protected class at the federal level,
mm-hmm.
correct, Mr. Chair, if I can?
Yeah, Mr. Nungesser.
That's correct.
Go ahead.
And so in essence, the effect of this bill will let me – and likewise, I could still sue in Florida without the bill mm-hmm. under state law. But what this bill would, in effect, do is create the new class in Florida and subsequently give the pregnant woman the opportunity of choosing the state or the federal statute to sue under.
Mr. Nungesser.
That's correct.
Mr. Chair. Would your organization oppose this bill if the state statute or if this bill was amended through the process to ensure that the tiered system at the federal level was consistent here in the state level?
we certainly have to take a look at it. I will tell you that there's another inequity that I laid out in my testimony as well. It's the going from 90 days after the right to sue to getting a full year to sue. So, I mean, there's two separate issues within the bill. I'd be happy to take a look at it.
Last follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
I think I understand the inequity of the tiered system. In essence, your organization is concerned that discrimination against a pregnant woman or the allegation of discrimination against a pregnant woman, that the plaintiff or the plaintiff's lawyer is going to, in effect, venue shop between either the state statute or the federal statute, and that the state statute would desperately leave your organizations sued at a higher level of liability under the state statute rather than the federal level, where the federal level would still cap the larger corporations. Is that your?
That's exactly.
Yes.
It.
Okay.
Yes,
sir.
All right. Thank you. And Representative Rangel, you had a question?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, Representative Watson pretty much said it best. If you're planning on doing discrimination, then I would be worried about it. But if you're not, then, you know, I wouldn't be worried.
Okay. So that's a little bit like debate, but we'll let that one stand. All right. Anybody have any further questions of this gentleman? Okay. Representative Comby.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Trying to figure out. The 90 days is where now?
Under current law, once a case is filed with the Florida Commission on Human Relations, they have 180 days to go through and determine if a violation may have occurred. If a violation may have occurred, then the case can go forward in terms of a lawsuit. Under state statute, the plaintiff would then have a full year to file suit. Under federal law, it's 90 days.
Okay. Federal law is 90 days.
Correct. Yes, sir.
You guys would just maybe come through me on this so we can keep some control. Appreciate it. Thank you. You're recognized. Representative Comby.
State law is currently 1 year for protected classes.
You're recognized, Chairman. Thank you. State law currently is 1 year for the protected classes that are articulated in statute right now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Members, any other questions? No. Okay, good. I think you're good to sit down. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Next, we have Amber Washington from the League of Women Voters. Thank you, Ms. Washington. And we have Mr. Brian Pitts, Justice to Jesus. Mr. Pitts, you're recognized.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I understand your concern for the bill, and, you know, you gave the sponsor a bit of a problem at the first committee, too. It's interesting, something is, well, I believe to be as simple, but, okay, here's the deal. Since the late 70s, it's already been in federal law. It's kind of a no-brainer. That is all she's doing, dovetailing it right with that. But, okay, here's the thing. It's necessary for the purpose of clarifying state law in line with federal law. We know that. Now, you probably should make it retroactive. I know some businesses probably would hate that because the state of bill right now is prospective. I say that for a reason. Because across the street, of course, they got it. They just went through our argument trying to determine whether it is or not because the court's kind of mixed up. And that's another reason why to bring forth the bill. So the issue here is it's valid to moot that case before they send out an opinion. Now, that opinion can come out any day now because the oral argument was in November across the street. But in this case, this would moot that, make it very clear. And since it moot that, hence you should also make it retroactive. Whoever caught up in it, oh well, but again, it has time. It's time sensitive. So ain't that many business going to be caught up in it. As some of the members said, well, look, if you're not discriminating, you won't have a problem then. That's correct then. This ought to be done to broaden the personal rights and remedies of the women as to the bill would allow, as expressed in the staff analysis, page 67, direct economic impact. If you read that, that answers your question of how the gentleman came before you talking about where you see the increase of compensatory damages and the extension of file to suit. On 6 and 7, see, God, read your staff analysis. It's nowadays it's right most of the time. It really is. 6 through 7 answers that question that many of you, I think Representative Waltman, was asking. And that's what the business person was speaking up when he came up before you. So your staff tell you right there flat out, no, it's not in the bill. But remember, anything around the bill that may change that's not changed will have an effect on law. So just because you see the bill itself don't mean all the changes is there. You must see what the cross-reference, as the gentleman said, or other extensions may occur by default. Because you're changing something simple in the bill. So look at page 6 and 7 to answer that question at direct impact. Lastly, staff does make a point on page 7 on concerning drafting issues, mentioning maybe you should define pregnancy as the federal statute does. just to make sure the construction is clear, because already our state courts have fought over it. So to not have the definition of it and say, no, we're just going to rely on the federal definition, and when the courts pick it up, they can just rely on that. No, no, let's make it very clear. So there is no question about this issue anymore in the courts. Probably the sponsor should add an amendment defining pregnancy and just dovetail the definition from the state. Now, here's the last point, which many of you would bring it up, you were concerned about. And I'm very familiar with this. Usually in an employment case, you can file a multi-count for state claims and federal claims. So the issue is bringing up, well, they could sue one or the other. No, it's not one or the other. In an employment case, I've seen attorneys do it all the time. You file count one, the federal claim, because a lot of times they'll file it in federal court after they get their right to sue for EOC. And then a second claim count will be for state claims using the FCRA. And it's two counts. And the point is you had to get more damages after the federal count is done if you win. Or if you don't win the federal claim, the federal court may go for it with the state claim. Usually they don't. They'll dismiss it and send it back to the state court. So it's not an or on the state or federal claims. It's both. And most attorneys do that to get as much money they can as they can. So I don't see a problem here. What happens is it's just we'll add now a double count in federal court. There's not a problem here, as you said. Just don't discriminate. They won't have a problem. But it's a good bill. But I will put that definition there so we don't have the courts fighting over now. Well, what is the definition under state law of pregnancy? We're not going to rely on the federal definition. You don't want the courts doing that. So I think you may want to take staff's advisement on that. But thank you very much. It is a good bill. And stop giving the problems on this now. Come on. Come on.
Thank you, Mr. Pitts. And I know the staff appreciate your compliments as well. Last, we had Michelle Wilson, Florida Commission on Human Relations. Anybody else wish to testify, please get a card up here. And Ms. Wilson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to clarify, I don't know if it's clear to the members, that we are already taking in these cases under the sex provision. So even if this legislation does not pass today, we will continue to take in these cases, and we will continue to provide an investigation towards the allegations and find cause or no cause. The problem is for the complainant, when that complainant gets before a judge, and that is where the discrepancy is. So we want to clarify this not only for the complainant but also for the respondent so everybody understands what they're dealing with. I don't know if that was made clear to you all, but that is the current status. We are taking these cases in. We are investigating them. Nobody is exempt from being investigated if a claim is brought against that particular employer.
Thank you, Ms. Wilson. Members in debate. Any debate on the bill? Representative Artiles, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. I have some concerns regarding venue shopping in this bill. We'll support this bill at this moment in time, but would ask that you work with the stakeholders in order to put something on paper that everybody can live with. There are several issues that have been pointed out that I did not know of, and one of which is the venue shopping provision within the bill. With that said, hope to look forward to working with everybody, and I ask that the bill sponsor works with the gentleman. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Artiles. Representative Broder, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill has a stop in judiciary afterwards, so I share the same concerns Representative Artiles does, and we'll let our colleagues in judiciary handle, I think, a lot more of what will be described with the venue shopping. From a state affairs standpoint, I think it's been our policy for a long time not to discriminate, and happy to support it today. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, others in debate? Representative Taylor, was that a yes?
No.
Oh, okay. Anyone else? All right. Seeing no further debate, Representative Berman, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do want to point out a couple different things. First of all, we have been working with them, with this group, and we will continue to work with them and try and figure out what we can do. But what they're talking about are the protection, the provisions that apply to every single class that's a protected class. The issues that they have apply whether you're bringing a case because of sex, because of race, because of any of the protected classes. So those concerns are all throughout the entire statute. And what we're doing here is we are just adding pregnancy to the list of protected classes, and we are doing what Representative Grant said. We are making the two statutes equal. We're adding making the state statute equal to the federal statute, or the question that Representative Grant raised, I should say. The question that he raised. And The problem is there are some concerns about the statute as a whole, which are mostly bigger issues than just our issue about adding the pregnancy to the statute. So we will continue to work with them, but I do think that this is a good bill. And as has been said here today, if you don't discriminate against your employees, you don't have any problems. You're not going to have an issue about where people are going to be bringing their claim. You're not going to have an issue about how much people are going to be able to recover. Those issues only happen when you discriminate against a pregnant woman, and let's not allow Florida to discriminate against pregnant women. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Berman. Having closed on your bill, John, will you please call the roll?
Representative Albritton?
Yes.
Artelis?
Yes.
Broda?
Yes.
Caldwell?
Yes.
Cumby?
Yes.
Eagle?
Yes.
Grant?
Yes.
LaRosa?
Yes.
Rayburn?
Yes.
Rangel?
Yes.
Stewart?
Yes.
Taylor?
Yes.
Wallman?
Yes.
Watson?
Yes.
Workman?
No.
Chevoy?
Yes. And members, by your vote, CS for HB 105 is reported favorably. Congratulations.
Mr. Chair, a point of personal privilege?
Yes. Representative Waldron, you're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say the other day I had the pleasure of speaking to an eighth grade civics class in Palm Beach County where my stepson goes to school, and we convinced him that he ought to come up here and to Tallahassee and see how the legislature works. He's sitting in the third row there, Nico. Just wanted to introduce him. And this way he can tell his teacher that he was actually here and that he wasn't just skipping school for the next couple of days. But welcome to the Florida House, Nico.
Welcome, Nico. You're following around a good man. Glad you're here. All right, members, there being no further business, Vice Chair Grant moves we rise. The meeting's adjourned.